So I just want to do a preamble, not about, this is about the weekend really, it's a preamble. Okay, I started off by saying this, but I want to reinforce it. There are two directions this path takes, and what often happens is that we go along and we see where the course of this practice actually goes, and we try to manage the way we know it's going through the standards of the way we've been practicing. But usually the way we start practicing down here at my elbows, it's been towards self-protection, self-improvement, beautification of self. That is not a discouraging, those are not discouraging comments. And at some point, you have to release the need to go in that direction to move in accordance with the way the Dharma goes once that's realized. And too many of us maintain or sustain the same way we've been practicing from the elbow to the hand in order to make this new direction viable. That doesn't work. Now, I'm not suggesting that you're doing anything wrong at all. And if you feel very attuned to what you are doing, regardless of where you are on this hand-elbow metaphor, that's fine. Stay with what you're doing, because at some point, the way you'll know is that it won't feel like it's working for you anymore. And then it's complicating things, or it feels too complicated, as I was just mentioning, in this, or something. And at that point, you start listening to whether a different direction might be the way you need to go. But if you're well into what you're doing and it's working for you and you're gaining a lot of insight and understanding, stay your course. I'm not trying to force you or even suggest that you alter your course at all. All right? But you need to know that the hand will eventually part from the, you know the metaphor, right? Okay. All right, it'll part directions. And so say, okay, so well, back in 2020, now the population of yogis that go in this direction get very narrow, get very few. For obvious reasons, there's nothing to gain from it. You don't gain anything. And so, why do it? Why not just stay on, I can proclaim myself from here and show my beautification. Okay, that's fine. Again, but I'm really interested in those yogis. As I get older and closer to death, I want to spend my time with those yogis. That's all. Not that the other is wrong, it's just that that's not the way I conceive it any longer. And even though they're few in number, that's where I want to spend my time. So if you're of a different inclination, just know my teaching may not feed you anymore, may not go along with you. And that's fine. Parting ways, I still and will forever love you. But we do need to part ways, okay? And that's fine. That's fine. It should be that way. And for those of you who remain, not because you want to hold on to the relationship with me, that's the worst reason to remain. That's worse than worst. That's worse than worse. So it must be the worst, right? Okay, so I'm available. That's all. Now your practices change. Everything changes in this deviation. Inquiry becomes very important. It should have been important back here, but it's never encouraged. at least I had to find my way to it, well up in here before I got into it. Transcendent values. You see, these are all ways that encourage us forward into the wonder and mystery of life. If you want an aphorism, and I never liked aphorisms, but this one works. Lie in bed and say, today I want to see the wonder of life. I want the wonder of life, please come in. While you're in bed, your perception will start changing. But it needs an intentionality, because a normal intentionality, an everyday intentionality, is just, let me get through the day, right? And you're going to get through the day with the usual assortment of struggle. And nothing's going to change from Tuesday to Wednesday. But if you invite a new perception in, today I want to live, as in the Mary Oliver poem, married to amazement. Just ask, see what happens, and be available to it when it does. We think coincidences are coincidences. Everything is a coincidence. Every single moment is a coincidence in that sense. But it's the dynamic of the mystery playing itself forward. And when it catches us off guard, we say, oh, that was amazing. Did you see that? What about this? What about being able to sit up here, you or us together? Do you realize the number of components have to come together for this to manifest? It's impossible for it to manifest. This is impossible. So that's it. Or for you to, the sperm of you to find the egg of you? Impossible. Impossible. Won't happen. But here we are. And with all the people in the room multiplied by, it's absolutely infinity impossible. Yeah, here we are. Hi, Linnell. So bring some amazement in your life. Bring some amazement in there. The mystery, the wonder, that's been sustained. I found it, one of the ways I find it is by bringing science into my Dharma. It's like, oh, wow, science is, it's confirming. You know it, dharmically. But when science, and it's all of its very objectives, start seeing the same damn thing, you go, whoa, there we go. Now that's the last vestige of any doubt we should have. Okay. What were we doing? Dyads. Dyads. You didn't tell me, Anna. She's fired. Okay, so pair up if you would. Okay. All right. So there's a responder and a questioner. I'll do a little bit of it. The questioner has a question that he or she will repeat over, again, giving enough gap and space between, don't drill it in, just like, and you float the question to your responder, and the responder will either respond or just be quiet, because things are working inside him or her as the response enters their consciousness. And they may not feel like responding. And then after a given period of time, maybe 15, 20, 30 seconds, the questioner can offer the question again, very gently, very gently. And so it's not necessary for the responder to be verbal, but you're certainly welcome to if you'd like. But it is important for both of you to be totally connected to the question at hand, so that even the questioner is taking the question in and letting the responder respond in whatever way that he or she does. But it doesn't mean that you are impartial to the question. You're taking it in both ways. Okay, so choose, first of all, I assume that you've introduced yourselves, because all that must have been, I'm Jane. But if you haven't, do so. Okay. So, questioner, here's your question. Responder, here's what you'll be asked. Where do you find the sacred in your life? Where do you find the sacred in your life? Don't come up with it. Just see where that goes. Where do you find the sacred? Where are you most nurtured? Where are you? Okay, so please begin. Okay, just being quiet now. Remember, this is an exercise of inquiry. And this can be done in solo, by yourself. You can be both the questioner and the responder. And sometimes in practice, there'll be a question that just arises. And it will have enough curiosity or force behind it that will send you to where that answer may lie. Okay, we're going to switch responders and questioners with the same question. Where do you find the sacred in your life? Begin as you wish. Good. Now just be quiet together for a minute or two. And just feel whatever remains of the conversation of any sense of self-judgment, just let all of that be part of the inquiry. Whoa, did this stir things up? Or whatever, whatever. Remembering that the simplest thing is quietude. Okay, now comes a more probing question. But don't hold yourself to some high existential statement. Just whatever, wherever you land with this one. And if you don't want to share it, that's fine. Okay, here it is. Back to the original questioner and the responder. Where is the sacred in this moment? Begin as you wish. Where is the sacred in this moment? Just being quiet together for a moment. sometimes asking yourself with sincerity the question and allowing the experience of the question to take you to the realization of the answer can open a portal through which you have a momentary sense or insight or access. It depends on how deeply you intend to go and how quiet you are in going. Which seems contradictory because you're also asking yourself a question, but you're not repeating the question over and over to yourself. You're just, you know where you're going with the question, and you just plummet right down there. What does that mean? What is that? What is that? Where is the sacred in this life, in this moment? Okay, switching questioner and responder. The same question. Where is the sacred in this moment? Begin as you wish. Okay, turn your seats around, if you would. So I want to offer a few questions that you might use to stimulate your inquiry. Don't pick them up because they sound great, but you have no interest in them. What am I missing that's already here? What am I missing that's already here? Don't, not here, don't go here. This is a koan. Is there a sincerity? You know, am I missing something? I don't want to miss something. See, we usually, okay, can I just go on a little dialogue here? Okay. Usually when we are in the moment, we're with the passing content of the moment, the experiences, the thoughts, the ideas, the emotions, the passing show of the moment, and we think that's the moment. That's actually not the moment. The moment is what holds all of that passing debris. That's the moment. that which changes isn't the simplest thing. And if I can't access it in the moment, it's inaccessible. Where are we going to access it? So what am I calling the moment? See, we spend too much time in this tradition with a Nietzsche change. It's there as a teaching to cause despair, really. Because there's no satisfaction in it. That's the point of it. It's not the point of it. It is something true about Nietzsche that is ultimately true. It's not. Because if you want to go to the simplest thing, you can't be found. It can't be found in the passing show of its expression. We have to get closer than that. And anyway, Nietzsche is safe. Nietzsche. You're over here. I'm not changing. Everything else is changing. Nietzsche. I'm not changing. You got to throw yourself in there. You got to be part of the Nietzsche. Then you know it's debris. That's how you know it's debris. Okay, next one. Has to do with that. What is not subject to change? What is not subject to change? There you go. And one in a more active frame of reference, how would love move me in this moment? How would love move me in this moment? Sometimes, okay, so let me just embody that and see how it moves me. Or here's a good one. What would I do now if I weren't afraid? You see, a reason I landed on this particular dyad of the sacred is because we think of the sacred and the mundane. There's two different things going on here, and I'm tired of the mundane, and I'm seeking the sacred. But it's all sacred. We're so far removed from that understanding that we invested in the forms of the world where we'll never find the sacred. And then we bow to the forms of the world to substitute for the sacred that we can't find. When it's everywhere, we live in it. We are being engulfed in it moment after. It can't possibly get out of it. But you have to join it to know that. Are you getting a sense of a theme here? Good. Good. I want to, I brought this, yesterday there was a question about form and formlessness, form and formless, the form and the formless. And I said that there was a reference the Buddha spoke about in the Sutta Nipata. And the reason that we can't find the sacred is that we look for it in form, because that's where our minds alight. They alight in the delight of form. That's where we can seek pleasure. We can get the experience of pleasure in forms that are pleasurable to us. So you don't find the sacred in the pleasure seeking or in the formations of the world. So this is the Buddha saying that there is a state where form ceases to exist. So, and then he goes on, and I'll read it in just a second, but he's talking about a shift in perception, not a shift in location. And for the longest period of time, I mean for the longest period, this was the most contradictory comment I ever read of the Buddha. It put me in knots. And yet I knew there was something to it. And I just persisted. I said, okay. He's scrambling me. So here's his statement. It is a state without ordinary perception and without disordered perception and without no perception and without any annihilation of perception. You know what? That makes perfect sense to me. It couldn't be said better.
Would you repeat it?
In a minute. You see, this is impenetrable. It's a bell, it will always be a bell. It's forever a bell. It's hard, it's solid, it's form, it's a bell. But the Buddha says there is a perception that ends form. There is a way to see, what's he say? There's a way for form to cease. There is a state where form ceases to exist. So that means I have to leave this world and go somewhere where there isn't any objects? Is that what that means? No, it doesn't mean that at all. I am not going to give you the answer to that. I'm not going to tell you the answer. I'm going to invite your curiosity into that. Knowing this, that it couldn't be stated better. Now, I'm not leaving you in a state of confusion, not if your heart really wants to untangle this, because it is comprehensible, completely understandable. So let me read it to you again. It is a state without ordinary perception and without disordered perception and without no perception and without any annihilation of perception. Okay. You're off and running. And for me, it was like, God damn it, I can't get this. It's like that kind of, just give me the answer. I mean, I was, you know, it's like that. Somebody tell me the answer. So, you know, that's the way I was like, you tell me, you, along the street here, you. Anybody. No. No.